On this week's show in the news, we've got a roundup of the major election results across Texas. We'll also hear what Governor Abbott is doing to fight back against the Austin City Council. In our interview, we talked to Latham Watts with First Liberty Institute about the radical anti-religion policies being pushed by the Democratic candidates for president. And I close with a commentary from Robert Montoya on how citizens in other countries have fought back when they faced a Green New Deal. Well, welcome, folks, to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm your host, Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 Studios in Austin, Texas. You can find us on the web at www.texasscorecard.com. I want to get started this week and do a little election roundup. Obviously, the constitutional amendment election happened on Tuesday, and we also had elections going on around the state. We've got Brandon Walton's Capitol Bureau chief who has a little bit to say about that. Let's talk about these. There were these other local elections, a couple of them big highlights for different reasons.
Yeah, you had elections all over the state, right? Texans took to the polls and cast their ballots. Not a big time for elections. A lot of people not thinking about elections. So you do have some low turnout.
What Trump next year? There's elections.
But that low turnout actually kind of results in some very interesting things. You look over in Midland. There was a massive school bond on the ballot there. About 24,000 votes cast in that comes down to 12 votes. It passes by 12 votes in the unofficial, you know, results. Definitely going to a recount, and we'll see if that possibly changes.
Yeah, there's all the absentee ballots and provisional ballots and other things that are out there that they have to deal with. So we'll see how that goes. Also, big election down in Texas' largest city in Houston.
That's right. In Houston, you have the mayor, Sylvester Turner, who's been there for one term. He's headed to a runoff now against Tony Busby, a local businessman, kind of a big character down there, headed to a runoff. And so we know that that's generally not a good sign if you're an incumbent.
Yeah, so it'll be really interesting to see if Turner, former Democrat state rep, very liberal, can hang on as mayor there, or if people want to go in a different direction. Very, very interesting stuff. The big ticket item, though, was we had all of these constitutional amendments that every Texan was going to vote on. And interestingly enough, we actually had one of them fail.
Yeah, no matter where you live in Texas, these were presented to you on the ballot. These were 10 propositions, constitutional amendments, that Texans needed to approve or disapprove. And generally these things pass, you know, almost without fail. I think I looked at the latest numbers, about 91% in the last 20 years of these passing. 90% of them, if they, 90% of them pass, well, interestingly, this played right into it. You had 9 of these 10 pass. One of them failed. And I'll start with that one because it was actually Proposition 1, which was on the ballot, which would have allowed municipal judges to serve in different municipalities simultaneously.
Yeah, basically these are the judges that whenever you get a city speeding ticket or a parking ticket or something, these are the judges of the municipal corporation that you go to, and they wanted to, I guess you could be the judge of City A and City B and City C and, you know, make a rotation or something like that.
And this is something that a lot of conservative groups like Texans for Fiscal Responsibility on the constitutional recommendations was neutral on. But interestingly, I think the lesson to look back here is there was really no campaign. I think a lot of folks had never really even heard of this until they got to the ballot, got to their polling place and looked at this, and they thought, no, I don't think we need to change that.
Yeah, we need to change the concept. I've not been sold on why we need to change the Texas Constitution so that we can do this weird thing.
Allow people to serve multiple roles. It just didn't pass the smell test for Texans and went down just about 2-1.
Now, the big news of the night is the passage of Prop 4.
Yeah, Proposition 4 is a amendment to the Constitution that will make it even more difficult, essentially, for the legislature to impose an income tax. Right now, it just needs a simple majority vote in the legislature to be put to a vote by Texans. Now, with this amendment passing and passing pretty overwhelmingly, Now it will require 2/3 vote, which makes it a lot more difficult to get through the legislature.
Yeah, and basically passing, I mean, Texans saying, hey, no to an income tax by about 3-1 margin is a pretty big blowout win for taxpayers there. Interesting in who opposed it. So the Democratic Party came out and they wanted to say, oh, well, there's no risk. We're not doing an income tax. It's not, but it's really important that you don't vote for this amendment. All the newspapers were out in the same way. So, oh, well, you don't really need to worry about an income tax, but don't restrict us. You know, maybe we might want to do this at some point.
Well, and it just shows. And furthermore, you had a lot of the labor unions. You had a lot of the education labor unions, particularly out there very explicitly opposing this. You had, you know, Democrats, the Democratic Party essentially campaigning against it. And I think if nothing else, this just shows how out of touch the Texas Democrat Party is with Texas taxpayers who at the end of the day don't want to see their taxes raised, don't want an income tax.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it was a good night for taxpayers and a good night across the state for that reason. And appreciate you updating us.
Absolutely.
Next, let's turn to Jacob Asmussen with the Central Texas Bureau. Jacob, we're always talking about the craziness that goes on in Austin and Travis County. And, of course, I want to talk to you about what's going on with these homeless encampments. But I think it's interesting, the election results, big outlier in blue Travis County.
That's right, Tony. They voted for statewide Prop 1.
The municipal judges thing, like I think it's the only county that I saw where they supported that, and then against Prop 4.
Yeah, they were supporting an income tax, essentially.
Yeah, so that's the voters that got a problem with government employees in Travis County supporting more and more tax increases. But the big story this week isn't them being outliers. The big story is that the governor is finally coming in and doing something about the city's radical pro-homeless encampment policies that they've been having over the last few months.
That's right, Tony. After 5 months of raging public controversy and public safety risk, on Monday, the state finally stepped in to Austin to start restoring public security.
Yeah, so we've had this policy in Austin where you've seen, in the same way that you would see out on the West Coast in L.A. and Seattle, these homeless encampments under the highways particularly, and then on city streets, the city backing off saying, oh, we're just not going to enforce the laws and the rules that say you can't do that. And so it's become just this huge mess, and now you've got the governor stepping in. Tell us what he's been doing.
Yeah, so the state is cleaning up homeless encampments under highways, and they're going to be doing that once a week or more until further notice.
Yeah, so TxDOT coming in, kind of noticing people and then saying, look, if you don't get your stuff out of here, it's getting thrown in the dump truck.
Right, but they're also directing those homeless individuals to nonprofits for immediate help.
Yeah. Now, see, this is the thing. A lot of people say, oh, well, this is harsh, it's not uncaring, but you know, allowing this to fester is harsh and uncaring. In fact, I remember I saw Fox News interviewing one of these guys under the highway there in Austin, and he said, says, oh, everybody, if you want to live on the streets, everybody knows across the country, Austin is the place to go. they give you food, they give you money, and it's a big party. That was what he said about it.
That's right, Tony. Well, Austin City Council did the same thing that we see a lot of these left coast cities do, right? City Council made it legal for vagrants to camp and sit and lie down in public spaces across the city, right? But the consequences of that that we have seen in places like San Francisco or LA have been absolutely disastrous. And Governor Abbott actually tweeted about that this week. He said San Francisco chose to tolerate homelessness and drug use. It did so in the name of compassion for the homeless, but the problems only got worse.
Yeah.
He said, we're not doing that in Texas.
Yeah, that's not compassion. What you want to do is make people be in a situation where they have to go get help instead of, you know, living on the street and having a party. Appreciate you reporting on it, Jacob.
Thanks, Tony.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Last week, I spoke with Latham Watts with First Liberty Institute about the radical anti-religion policies being promoted specifically by Beto O'Rourke, but also by all of the Democratic candidates for president. Now, since Latham and I talked, Beto O'Rourke has announced that his campaign has gone kaput and he's jumped out of the race. But these issues remain very important, and I hope you find it informative. Well, it's great to welcome this week's guest on the program, Latham Watts with First Liberty Institute. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, I wanted to have you on. You guys are the kind of forefront, foremost organization fighting in the courts for religious liberty. And I just saw recently Beto O'Rourke running for president, running for the Democratic nomination for president, not particularly doing all that well. But in one of these debates that was going on, he came out and said he is for taking away tax exemptions and taking away tax status from churches that oppose homosexual marriage. And I wanted to have you, I know you guys are the ones most equipped to win a fight if you had an administration that wanted to do that. So I wanted to unpack that a little bit. What is this proposal that the left and Beto specifically are wanting to do? How are they targeting churches?
Right. So in a, I believe it was a town hall on CNN that was specifically about issues around the LGBTQ agenda, he was asked if not just churches, but Christian schools, faith-based nonprofits or charities, anyone who's a C3, if they should lose that status if they did not support same-sex marriage. And he, I mean, didn't miss a beat, said affirmatively yes, that he would make it a priority of his administration. It's not the first time that we have, at First Liberty, have dealt with something like this, going all the way back to, I believe, 2009, when then Texas Governor Rick Perry made statements about the issue of marriage, and some churches and pastors came out in support of him, and they received some nasty grams from the IRS. We represented those churches and pastors and were able to resolve that in their favor. So this is not our first rodeo with folks that are that seem to want to weaponize the tax code against ideas that they, you know, find distasteful. But it would be blatantly unconstitutional for an O'Rourke administration or the current administration or any administration to try and use the tax code to you know, establish some preferred doctrine when it comes to the issue of marriage, gender, whatever it may be.
Whatever the issue is, I mean, we already have a tax code that I think I would argue is way overburdensome on nonprofit organizations, including churches, where you have essentially the tax collectors coming in and saying, well, you can say this about a political candidate, but you can't say that. We already do that. And here they're wanting to go further and say, well, we're going to hyper-analyze what positions churches take on these deeply moral issues and then take that status away. You know, is this, I mean, some people would, I think, want to portray as, oh, well, it's just a tax issue. And so, well, they pay some taxes, they don't pay taxes. But it is a threat to actual religious liberty.
It absolutely is. You know, and it is one of those unique proposals that manages to violate both the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause when it comes to religious liberty. That's a tough twofer to pull off, but Beto seemed to have done it. Because if you're talking about, well, the government prefers this doctrine when it comes to a religious issue like marriage, then you have a violation of the Establishment Clause. And if you tell people you know, they cannot donate to a, or you know, that stripping the tax status, which, you know, impacts people's ability to donate to certain causes because of their stance, you know, you could construe that as a violation of the Free Exercise Clause as well. And so there's no you know, the Constitution, and since it had to be amended to provide for income tax anyway, which is one I think a lot of Americans might take a mulligan on now if we had the choice.
Yeah, I bet so.
But nothing in the IRS code, nothing in the Constitution would authorize any branch of government to then infringe upon the Constitution itself.
Well, so, I mean, and there's a historical basis for these tax exemptions. Can you explain a little bit? I mean, I know it goes back in basically centuries to say that you know churches are off limits from the tax man.
Right. Well, I mean, you think, you know, the Establishment Clause was written to prevent there ever being an official church of the United States of America. You know, the founders had just won a war with, at the time, the greatest empire in the history of the world that had the Church of England, which people were taxed to support whether or not they attended that church or believed anything that church said. And our founders were not going to have that here. And so they wrote the Establishment Clause to keep government out of the church's business. And, you know, the founders always recognized the positive role of religion in a free and civil society. That to that end, as we move forward in history with, you know, taxes and that sort of thing, that the churches were exempted from that. And, you know, your donations to a church or a ministry or a faith-based nonprofit or whatever it may be now have a positive net impact on the economy. So that's the thing that I think has been missed in this whole conversation. It's not just unconstitutional, it's bad policy. There are studies out right now that show the contribution to the American economy from religion and religious people over $1 trillion a year. It's more than the top tech companies combined.
Sure.
You combine that with the money saved by the government when churches and people of faith and charities provide a lot of services to combat a lot of social ills that government is also trying to help with. Well, when somebody's getting that from a church or a charity, they're not getting it from the taxpayers. So it saves money as well. So it's bad policy all the way around, and it's unconstitutional. And, the good news is I don't think there's going to be an O'Rourke administration. I mean, most of the polls show, I think, his performance on the trail. I mean, I think the American people don't trust this guy to run a car wash, let alone a country. But the good news is if any administration, Republican or Democrat, because, again, First Liberty is a 501c3, we would be first in the fight to defend this. We've won on this before, and we will win on it again if necessary.
Yeah, so I want to talk a little bit about some of that strategy, but I guess to the point of, you know, okay, so here's this guy, Beto O'Rourke, doing poorly in the polls, trying to get attention for himself, becoming more and more radical on this issue and gun issues and, you know, just picking Certainly. Things all over the place where he's coming out in just very radical positions. What's the reaction? Do you know how some of these other Democrat candidates who are doing more successfully in the polls, do they agree with this? Have they tried to step away from it? I know that there were some that it seemed like they were trying to distance themselves
right.
from this, but there's still a problem of obviously there is a radical component in the activist base in the Democratic Party that is saying this is a great idea. Otherwise, Beto wouldn't be out there saying it.
You're exactly right. And in that town hall where he did say that, they asked basically the same question to Cory Booker, who kind of just kind of, you know, hemmed and hawed and tap danced around it. I think the other candidates in that primary field are probably a little wary of Beto O'Rourke. Doesn't seem to understand the first rule of Fight Club when it comes to some of these issues that I think, frankly, other candidates in the field probably agree with him but would not say so. And when he does, it kind of paints them into a corner of having to say, well, do you agree or disagree? I mean, I think these would be really good questions for a debate. And their stance on religious liberty and these types of issues. But so far, they haven't been really asked.
Yeah, and so, the other candidates, he's out there full-throatedly saying yes, and everybody else is hemming and hauling. I guess to your point earlier, we obviously don't want to set off a panic that this is, you know, something that's, you know, going to happen tomorrow, but we do have to be prepared if this is something discussed on a debate stage. What would be the strategy and response? How could people fight back if the, you know, next, you know, at some point, I'm sure there will be another Democrat administration with a radical IRS, very possible. What is the response? How do people fight back on that?
Well, they can contact us at firstliberty.org, and you know, we represent people of all faiths all across America. You know, churches and ministries and faith-based nonprofits and individuals of any faith tradition anywhere in this country. And as I said before, we have dealt with this previously, and you know, as a nonprofit, and you know, we're supported by donors. Our clients are never billed for the work. So if this ever did get proposed seriously or attempted to be imposed upon somebody, we would be right there, ready, willing, and able to take their case and pursue, you know, whatever the appropriate legal means to resolve it, whether that would be you know, directly with the IRS or, you know, via federal lawsuit or whatever it might take.
So I guess, first answer, there's probably a way to confront the IRS over their decision-making, and then if they implemented a policy to actually file a lawsuit, you know, in federal court and actually carry that forward in the courts to fight back in that way.
Correct.
Yeah. What if the courts don't listen? I think people get a little frustrated with the courts on all kinds of issues. I mean, do you just not pay? I mean, I don't know what would be the way of resistance to this. Do you cooperate? Is there civil disobedience? I'm kind of wondering what the best answers are whenever, you know, the powers that be don't listen.
Well, I think paraphrase an old saying: we will we'll jump off that bridge when we come to it. I don't think that this is likely to be something people will have to confront. It's not out of the realm of possibility, but the Constitution says what it means. It means what it says, and I would say even within the last few years, we have seen the tide starting to turn in First Amendment cases that we have brought, even as recently as June when we won a Supreme Court case.
That's right.
And with the court sort of starting to return to a more textualist and original intent view of the Constitution, I think people can be confident in the court's interpretation and people doing the right thing. And if people take anything away from this interview, I hope they will take away that you have the right to live your faith every day, not just on Sundays, and that includes how you donate your money, and do not live in fear.
Yeah.
Go out and live your faith every day, and know that there are people like First Liberty around to protect you if and when it's necessary.
Well, and this is why it's so important that we get good conservative judges appointed, and why it's so important that organizations like First Liberty have your, you know, litigation strategy laying the groundwork, winning cases now, so that you can bank up support for these victories when these other, you know, serious fights come along. We're running out of time. Tell folks who are listening, how can they connect with First Liberty, and how do they reach out to y'all?
Certainly. So our website is firstliberty.org. Spell all of that out, firstliberty.org. And there's lots of resources for you there. You can get a free copy of the Constitution there if you need one. You can get toolkits that are sort of self-help kind of for churches and ministries and public schools and the military to know your rights. You know, founders expected us to be the first guardians of our own liberty. You can't can't defend your rights if you don't know what they are. So we have lots of resources there right at the top of the page. If you do need legal help, there's a very easy tab to fill out, and we'll get back in touch with you. And, you know, follow us on social media as well, if you like, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. But basically everything starts and ends at our website, and folks can find it at firstliberty.org.
Great. Well, First Liberty Institute, great organization, doing great work. Thank you for coming on, sharing some thoughts. I know I can trust you guys would help lead the fight if we needed to. So thank you for everything you do.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's that time of year again, time for Empower Texans' annual Conservative Leaders Gala. The Conservative Leaders Gala, or CLG, happens each December in Irving, Texas, and is a time for celebration and fellowship with members of the grassroots from the far reaches of the Lone Star State. One night where we all come together and honor the hard work done by everyday Texans to ensure Texas' Lone Star shines a little brighter. As we've done every year, 12 awesome activists will be honored in front of the crowd and be awarded engraved cavalry swords, symbolizing their role on the front lines of the fight for freedom. So RSVP today at empowertexans.com/events and join us at the Conservative Leaders Gala December 7th in Irving, Texas.
We hear a lot about the Green New Deal and all the far left's radical environmental policies, and a lot of people think the sky is falling. But as Robert Montoya touches on in this week's commentary, these things have been done in other countries, and there are definitely ways to fight back.
A winning plan exists for conservatives in Texas who want to protect hardworking taxpayers from disastrous climate change policies. This is Robert Montoya with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. Seeing Republicans like U.S. Senator John Cornyn of Texas embrace the climate change cult is disconcerting, especially considering how these policies hurt those trying to get by in life. Hardship occurs wherever so-called green policies are implemented. Canadians have suffered higher gas prices and a 2% increase in inflation, while Australians' electricity bills have been exploding. In one case, they rose 85% higher in 1 year in the state of Victoria. And for what? The British government found their carbon taxes did nothing to help the environment and had to be paused to stop paying for taxpayers. Moreover, none of these policies address China and India's ever-increasing pollution, which more than cancels out any marginal effect these Green New Deals allegedly bring. You pay more taxes for nothing. It's coming true in Texas, too. Georgetown residents saw their energy bills rise because of a greater reliance on renewable energy. Because all of us want clean air and water for our children, too many Republicans act like there's no way to stop these ineffective Green New Deals. That's not true. Just look at Australia and Canada. After Australia enacted its carbon tax in 2012, Conservative Tony Abbott led the nation's mainstream Conservative Party in a crusade to axe it. Winning an enormous majority for his party in 2013 and becoming Prime Minister, shortly after, he fulfilled his promise in spite of having to deal with a hostile Senate. In Canada, Conservative leaders like Doug Ford in Ontario's 2017 election and Jason Kenney in Alberta's 2019 election campaigned hard against their province's carbon taxes. Their parties went on to win huge majorities, and both men fulfilled their promise to the voters. And months ago, Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison pulled off a miracle when he led his party to victory against the leftist Labour Party, an election Morrison and his party were widely expected to lose. Now, how these Conservatives managed to defeat the left in their respective countries? Well, let's look more closely at Australia's recent election. The Labour Party listed climate change as their number one issue, whereas Morrison focused on the economy and the plight of forgotten man and woman, the ones who must pay taxes and are working hard to have a fair go in life. Abbott ran on a similar theme in 2013, as did Canada's Ford and Kenney in their elections, all focused on the pain taxpayers were feeling because of catastrophic climate change policies, and how their own alternative policies would bring relief and a brighter tomorrow. Conservatives in Texas and across America must learn from these examples and paint a clear contrast between the wallet-busting and ineffective climate change policies of the left and the positive and prosperous policies we offer. Our message should be, as one conservative put it, "I fail to see how we make the earth cleaner by making the poor poorer." With this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary, I'm Robert Montoya.
Well, that's all I've got for this week's show. If you enjoyed the program, go on and subscribe to the Texas Scorecard Radio podcast on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Spotify. If you're already subscribed, go on there and give us a 5-star review. Tell us what you think of the show. It's very helpful and helps promote it. Thanks for listening.
Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.